So that was Jeff Berner, and we're going to move on to other things right now. We're going to be hearing from Harry Gulkin. He is the producer, a co-producer of the film Lies My Father Told Me. And on January 26th and 27th at the Cinema Space at the Siegel Center, the film will be screening and they'll be selling copies of the DVD, and Harry will be there for a Q&A. So if anybody wants to go and check that out, you can get information about the screening and about the DVD and the film at thesiegelcenter.org. And we're going to go right away to this clip with Harry. The movie Lies My Father Told Me takes place in the alleyways and apartments of Montreal in the 1920s and deals with the struggle between different values and worldviews. And there's so many layers to the film, but most impressive is the relationship between a young Jewish boy and his Zadie. And I'm not going to say much more than that. Here's Harry Gulkin, a co-producer of the film, taking us back to the period when Lies My Father Told Me took place.
My name is Harry Gulkin. 35, no, 36, 37 years ago, I produced Lies My Father Told Me. I was an active film producer at the time. I am 82 years old, and I have been retired now for 2 years. I did spend the previous 20 years prior to my retirement as a director of projects at SODEC, the Société de Développement des Entreprises Culturelles, in Quebec. What else would you like to know about me? Lies My Father Told Me takes place in the 20s in Montreal and is the story of a young boy of about 6 or 7 who lives in a house in East End, Montreal, in a courtyard with his mother and father and grandfather. His grandfather is a rag peddler. The rag peddlers used to go up and down the streets of Montreal buying used clothing and all kinds of other equipment and selling it. And his father is sort of a ne'er-do-well inventor who figures he's going to make it rich on one of his inventions. The mother is the mediator between those two. The grandfather is a traditional religious Jew. The father is basically what he thinks of himself as a modern scientific man who objects to his father-in-law filling the boy's ears with religious and non-scientific ideas. The lies, which is the title of the story, is the father's scientific explanations, which contradict those of his father-in-law. The story is autobiographical. Ted Allen, who wrote the story, who was an exceptionally talented Canadian, Montreal writer and screenwriter. He did the biography of Norman Bethune. He co-wrote Love Streams, which won all the awards at the Berlin Film Festival with John Cassavetes, and many other things. What appealed to me about that story was that it dealt one between the love of a grandfather and his grandchild. And that's something that I didn't experience in life because I only knew my immediate nuclear family. My grandparents were still in Russia or dead, and I had not experienced that particular thing in life, and I was quite taken with that kind of love, which is really quite a remarkable one, which doesn't have the impediments of the love which exists immediately between parents and their children. The second thing about it, which was equally important in attracting my attention, was when I was growing up on the Main, on St. Lawrence Boulevard, as we knew it, we lived on the east side of the street, just below Duluth. We had an enormous backyard that ran all the way back to St. Dominic's. And at St. Dominic Street, there was a blacksmith. That blacksmith used to shod the horses of the rag peddlers. They all used to come just behind our backyard. So that had a certain resonance for me in terms of my childhood. So all of that, kind of connected me with it and said, well, this is a film that I can really feel passionate about and want to do.
And so the film takes place in Montreal in the 1920s.
Right.
So how accurately does it depict that time period?
Well, I believe it did have it was a pretty accurate description of that. Now, I don't remember Montreal from that period. I was born in 1927. So my recollection of the 20s is not exactly very strong. But as far as my recollection of the 30s is concerned, and it is strong, yes, it was pretty accurate. There were somewhat more cars in the 30s, but yeah, there's the horse-drawn streets, the dingy flats, the walk-ups, the cold water flats, all of that was, and the rag peddlers going up and down crying rags, clothes, bottles, which was their cry.
How has this neighborhood changed since then? Because now it's a very expensive, sought-after place to live, the Plateau. How have the apartments and the places there changed since that time?
Well, strangely, the exteriors haven't changed very much. But what has changed is that there are bathrooms and hot water and 220 electrical wire. So there's been a renovation and gentrification which has happened there. What's absent are the shops. It was, in the 20s, and also when I was growing up, a predominantly Jewish district. So you had a plethora of delicatessens. You still have some. I mean, you have Schwartz's, but there must have been a half a dozen in the same area at that time. And a smoked meat sandwich was a nickel.
Oh, my God.
At Rigatko's, which was downstairs from where we lived.
Thank God it's not a nickel anymore.
No, it's not a nickel. No, it's shame. Well, at Schwartz's, it was a dime back then. That was still the classy.
Okay, the classy place?
The classy place for smoking. What's changed, everybody's got refrigerators, so you no longer have a truck coming along with ice in the summer and guys carrying blocks of ice up into houses to put into ice boxes. So all of that part of it has changed a lot, which is partially a consequence of advances in technology and, as importantly or more importantly, changes in the economic status of many of the people who live there.
So we're back on Shtetl, and that was Harry Gulkin, and we're running out of time, but we've got enough time for the second clip. I talked to Harry just a couple of days ago in his apartment in Mailand, and it was so great to meet him, and I think you'd really enjoy seeing the film. It's a beautiful movie, and it's going to be playing, like I said, at the Siegel Center's cinema space. So if you want to get information or buy tickets to the film on the 26th and the 27th of January, you can call 514-739-7944 or go to thesiegelcenter.org. And we're going to go out with this last clip. Before we do, I'd like to thank Katie Moore, the tech for Shtetl, doing a really great job. And Katie's not going to be with us next week or in a couple of following weeks because she is supporting the killing of dead children. Now she's going to be going and performing at the Vancouver Winter Olympic Games in a very, very cool role. She's going to be doing backup singing for Feist. So congratulations to Katie, and she'll be back when the games are done. So thank you to Jeff Berner. And this is Harry Gulkin. I asked him if there might ever be a sequel to the classic Lies My Father Told Me.
I was really hoping that maybe you might produce a sequel. Is there any possibility that there'd be a sequel to Lies My Father Told Me?
I never considered it.
Never considered it?
I never considered it. I think there's a certain purity to the story.
Okay, well, if there was a sequel, which I know there never will be because it's such a complete film in itself, it doesn't need a sequel, the characters in the film, where would they be today? I'm really curious about the father, Harry Herman. He's kind of reminds me a little bit of Diddy Kravitz, kind of on the fast make, always looking for a quick buck.
Is he
kind of representative of a Jewish man in the 20s?
My feeling is that he was less representative of Jewish men in the 20s than he was from the 50s onward, where I think he was really representative.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that there's been a substantial change in the social values which existed in the community as it moved from a community which was, in the main, although not in terms of a large majority, working class. People there worked in the basically the textile and clothing industry, and small business people, little corner groceries, stuff like that. And with World War II and the affluence that came from it, a whole generation got educated, went into professions, or went into business. And slowly, the values became that dominant North American value of going for the buck, which I think is the majority ethos, the dominant ethos in that community now, which I don't think it was in those years. In those years, there was, I think, a far more idealistic view of what life should be and a greater concern for universal human values that I suspect exists today. Like the heroes used to be when I was growing up, it was the scientists, it was the musicians, it was the medical heroes. Of course, it was Einstein who personified all of that. It slowly moved into the generals, that these became the heroes, people around which young people model themselves, and the other heroes were the very successful businessmen. Mm-hmm. And that saddens me. And, you know, I regret that change.
So you basically saw the evolution of the Jewish community in Montreal. And it started off that there were certain heroes, like perhaps the grandfather in the movie, religious men or people who were thinkers. There are a lot of people talking about Marxism and Leninism.
You have that in the film, too. I mean, you have the tailor who's...
Exactly. That's really there. Today, that's not so present. You witnessed how things changed.
Yeah.
The Jewish community is sort of perceived as being a very wealthy community where business is very important and professionalism is very important. Would you have hoped that it might have taken a different direction?
Well, you see, without a fundamental change in society, it couldn't take a different direction. And the fundamental changes in society that have happened have not necessarily improved things. That is, where countries became communist or socialist, the quality of life did not necessarily improve. The opportunity to have options in life diminished completely, and most often into pretty oppressive societies. I mean, those were the options. Now, there might have been another way, but I haven't seen it.
I hope you don't mind that I'm asking. I'm veering away from the movie a little bit.
Okay.
But when you were growing up in Montreal, who were the men that you were seeing in your life that were influencing you? Were there these rabbis or these Orthodox men, or was it...
No. I had a great hatred of religion.
You did?
And the rabbis. I was a communist.
Okay.
And a very active communist, as were my parents.
Okay.
Until I was 29 years old, I guess, up until about 1956. And I was the correspondent for the Communist Weekly in Quebec for a period, and an organizer of the Canadian Seamen's Union. I used to be a merchant seaman. So I was a very active character who believed at the time that the solution to all the problems of society lay in a Marxist and a Marxist society in which the means of production, basically an egalitarian society, which I then considered to be the essence of democracy. It proved not to be the case. And of course I left and no longer have any belief that corresponds to that. So I'm not the right person to ask that question. Musicians, composers, scientists, those were the models.
Okay. I wish I could have been around to see how things evolved, like what happened, why did you decide not to be a communist, who were you interacting
with?
Well,
that's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
I have to leave that for another
reason. I know. But it is actually so related to the movie because you see all these influences there. It's the father, the pure capitalist. And
the reason for the change in my thinking was the final realization that the system that was put into place in Russia, in the Soviet Union, was terrible. It slaughtered people. And when that realization sunk in, people said, well, what are we doing with that idea?
Right.
It doesn't work.
And that's when you became a film producer?
Some years later.
Yeah?
Some years later, yeah.
How did you get into producing?
Just by deciding to do it.
Just by deciding to do it?
Yeah, deciding to do it and then raising some money and doing it. Yeah, I was, how old was I? I was about 42 or 43 when I decided to go into film.
Okay.
Yeah, I had done a variety of things. I'd been a portrait photographer, which was my father's occupation. I'd been a merchant seaman, and I had been a union organizer and a journalist for the left-wing press and a Communist Party organizer. And then when I left the party, which was very difficult, it was like leaving a cult. It was like a cult. I had a very hard time adjusting and making a living. You sort of felt like a defrocked priest. You're sort of out there with it. But quite quickly, within a couple of years, I became a successful market researcher and consultant. And then the director of organization planning of Steinberg's, if you remember the chain.
The grocery
and
store.
The executive assistant to Sam Steinberg, and I was doing very well. But that was very unsatisfactory. I mean, I really felt I was wasting my life, that I wasn't doing anything meaningful. And at a certain point, I decided that it would be film.
Was it as risky and unstable a business to go into, film, back then, as it
there
seems
was
to
nothing,
be now?
It hardly existed as an industry, and it was about the riskiest and stupidest thing that somebody could imagine. And I never made a living at it. I mean, I made a number of films, and
you
I like...
You never made a living at it?
No.
Okay.
I mean, it was very, very difficult, no.
Okay.
No, I didn't always get paid for my work.